It's WrestlePod, the Troopany Show, with your host, James Troopany.
Hello and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany, this is my show, and today I have a very special guest making his return to the Troopany Show after a long absence, Mr. Ben Spindler. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. How are you, James?
I'm doing fine, thank you very much. Thanks for asking.
Good, good. Well, it's not that long, is it? Because I was in the quiz, so true. I know that wasn't really the Troopany Show.
No, I was kind of just running things. Someone had to
be in
charge.
Is that what you called it? I called it chaos, with nobody really running anything.
Well, someone had to ask the questions, and it was me. Now, today we're going to have a bit of a State of the Union of the Wrestling World chat, because lots of things have happened in the last few months, really. We've got New Japan Pro Wrestling just had Wrestle Kingdom and looking to be a bit more of a dominant player on the world stage. We've got TNA with new ownership. WWE are doing their WWE thing. And you've got Ring of Honor who are doing some interesting things and trying to broaden their scope. And the wrestling business seems to be on a bit of a high and things are happening. So Ben asked if he could come on the show and we could have a chat about it. So this is going to be kind of like one of our older episodes back in the day where me and Ben would just have a chat. So what do you feel about the business at the moment then, sir? Because you had a long break from watching it and then came back to it. So what are you thinking about it now?
Well, it's so funny, actually, that you should say it's on a bit of a high because I'm here in a way to put a dampener on everyone's excitement. And to be honest, it's not, that's not my only... that's not the only thing I'm going to try and do. I want to bring a little bit of context to that. And actually, you know, as you say, I've sort of come back to it a little bit in the last 6 months. I haven't fully come back, though, I will be honest, James. I consider myself at the moment, and I realised this when I was watching the Survivor Series, to be a casual fan. And it's a category of fan that I hadn't maybe considered really existed in the past, but it's the a casual fan who also isn't, unaware of the workings of the business. And I actually think there's probably a sizable number of people who are like that, who do know what they're talking about when they're talking about wrestling, and they just don't really watch it anymore. And I realized I'm one of those people now. And so actually I can start to give you a little bit of a perspective from the casual fan perspective too, which I thought was quite cool. I have started watching wrestling again. I think the last time we spoke, other than for the quiz, was to talk about the Final Deletion.
Yes.
Show. And that was the only wrestling show I watched for about 6 months. And that should give you some example of where I was, because, you know, Final Deletion, what it was, and the craziness. I wouldn't say it was that brought me back. I think what happened, James, is the world got more depressing. So I figured, you know, I have to go back and get into wrestling again, because at least I could escape the depressing way that the world has gone through the medium of the squared circle.
Yeah, I can agree with you there. There's always an escape in wrestling for everybody, you know. And I genuinely believe that, like, a lot of people are feeling good about wrestling at the moment because of the fact that the world's gone to shite. And I'm one of those people, you know. It was nice to get crazy about Wrestle Kingdom this year, because it wasn't like the world's going to end and we're going out of Europe and there's going to be nuclear war and oh my God. You know, it was nice for me and my mates to get excited about something that was really cool and we really enjoyed it. And if you listen to the Wrestle Kingdom podcast, you can see how excited everybody was. So,
totally. Yeah. And actually, James, I think that is very, very important. I think it's all, you know, you kind of end up withdrawing into yourself. You're kind of like, you know what, this is so awful. I just have to go back to the fantasy land rather than the real world, because actually the fantasy land, as often as we may complain or moan about it, actually is more uplifting than the dreadfulness that's out there on the street right now.
Well, let's start with the big guns. Let's start with WWE. How do you feel about WWE at the moment? And we've got the British tournament coming up this weekend. We've got Royal Rumble in a couple of weeks' time. And obviously that's the build to WrestleMania, which doesn't seem to have a strong narrative for anything at the moment, which, you know, as long-time wrestling fans for us, traditionally the WrestleMania push starts after SummerSlam. You've got a good idea who's going to be in the main event, who's going to be guests, who's going to be doing interesting things, what the big matchups are certainly going to be, and that doesn't seem to have happened this year.
So WWE, I think, I kind of agree with you, but I also don't agree with you, because I actually think If you, I mean, look at Survivor Series. I think it's pretty clear what's happening at WrestleMania. I would suggest Goldberg and Lesnar are going to have a rematch, and the Survivor Series was the build for that. I know there was a lot of criticism at the time about the fact that Goldberg defeated Lesnar in the way he did. I think I would have been in the same place a year ago, maybe 18 months ago. But I think now it's quite clear that they've no one on the roster that can capitalize on Lesnar's runaway aura. They've really presented the entire roster for too long as being substandard to Lesnar. So they've really got no one else that they can use to do this now. And I guess ultimately what Vince is looking at, and this is what he's always looked at, is really what's the next WrestleMania? He doesn't really care about 4 or 5 years down the line. All he's looking at right now is what is the next WrestleMania? And the next WrestleMania, I don't think they had a better thing for Lesnar to do at that WrestleMania. So in that respect, I mean, don't get me wrong, it wouldn't have been my first choice, but I don't, in terms of the way Vince thinks and the way we know he thinks, I don't think it's a bad idea. So I'd say in that respect, there is one match that seems relatively obvious for the Rumble. Sorry, for WrestleMania. Of course, we're recording this a couple of weeks before the Rumble, so I've no idea. That may change, who knows? But that seems to me to be the case. Unless, of course, they're planning something else for Goldberg and Lesnar, but I just can't see how or why they would do what they did at the Survivor Series if that's what they were doing.
Yeah, no, I can see where you're coming from with that. Certainly, like from a non-watcher's perspective, because I don't really keep up with WWE product that much. I watch the bits I need to, but it seemed to me like that's a big match, and Survivor Series isn't really the place for it. But obviously, it was down to timing. Goldberg's available. You've got the video game, and he's on the cover of that. So it made logical sense. But if I was booking it, I wouldn't want them two clashing there. I'd want them clashing at WrestleMania this year. Maybe a rematch at SummerSlam, and then you've got a story for the WrestleMania the following year. So, yeah, I guess it is the build for this one. So it does make sense in that sense for the big match between two veterans, which you kind of expect to see somewhere in a WrestleMania story. And obviously, both of them have got a legacy of a terrible match that they both hated to get rid of. So it gives them a chance to redeem themselves from, I think it was WrestleMania 20, wasn't it? So, yeah, so. Yeah, I can see the sense of that, and that's a big money match. But again, it goes back to the old argument of, but you're not making anyone who's on the current roster look bigger, make them stronger, no one's getting over. And that's been the knock on the WWE for a long time about WrestleMania, and it still doesn't seem to have it doesn't seem to be a problem that's resolved itself. Now, there is obviously the point that Vince, as you just quite rightly said, probably doesn't care. But it does not necessarily bode well for the long-term stability of the company, as you know, as we've seen with viewing figures have dropped continuously and steadily over the previous 5 or 6 years. You're not building that next big star to take over from John Cena. You're not building that next big star that's going to be the next guy who's going to be the guy. Obviously, they're trying really hard with Roman Reigns, and it's not working, and whichever way they do it. What do you feel about the Reigns situation? Do you think he's the man for the job?
I think if they want to make him the man for the job, they have to turn him heel. I think he's a he look, don't get me wrong, I think he's a decent enough wrestler to be a top star in the WWE. Like, no one's ever going to say that WWE is the workers' promotion, right? No one can level that charge at WWE. Otherwise, Diesel would have never been world champion. John Cena probably would have never been world champion. Batista would have never been world champion, and so on. He has the wrestling ability to be the WWE world champion and the top star in WWE from a wrestling perspective. He doesn't have the freedom to be the person that he needs to be that top star at the moment. I think they keep trying to script him in a way that they think will work, and it's not working because it doesn't fit him personally. And I think ultimately we've got to the point where I think if Roman, I said a couple of years ago, I felt that Roman Reigns should have turned heel at WrestleMania, and that was not exactly a revolutionary thought. Lots of people thought he should have done that. And I think that he won't be a top star or the top star until he does turn heel. I mean, not having watched it as much as most people who will be listening to this, I don't know what the approach to him has been since he had his positive test or his failure in the wellness policy, his wellness policy violation earlier this year, or last year, I should say. But from what I saw at the Survivor Series, for example, because that was the one pay-per-view of WWE's I've watched in the last since WrestleMania last year, it seemed to me that he was just one of a number of acts on the main WWE roster who were in that sort of position of being a regular pay-per-view headliner, but not a WrestleMania pay-per-view headliner. And I lump in Kevin Owens and Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose and probably AJ Styles as well in with all of those people. They're all at that sort of level where perhaps one or two standout performances or standout results at WrestleMania could turn them into that, but right now they're not. They're just not there. And, you know, the other thing I noticed at Survivor Series was, I mean, I watched the... I thought the wrestling was excellent. I thought it was a very good wrestling show from top to bottom, even the main event. The Survivor Series match, 10-man Raw versus SmackDown thing, I thought was a very, very good match, very high quality. But what I did notice was that when the people came out to the ring, I was very interested for this, because this is where my kind of casual wrestling fan brain was starting to kick in, was who looks like a star? Who do I want to follow here? Who... When they come out, is there an aura around them? Of the 10 men that were in that match, and let's not forget those 10 men were all supposed headliners, really.
Yeah.
Only two of them, for me, had any kind of star aura. One of them was Jericho, who obviously was in Canada and is a bit of a legend north of the border, so it made perfect sense. He came into a huge reaction. And for example, to compare with Kevin Owens, who didn't really come out to very much of an action, a reaction, given that he's also from Canada, said a lot, I think, about where he is right now. And the other person who stood out a mile from everyone was Styles. I thought Styles just looked every bit the star when he walked out. And he made me, he was the one person I thought, this guy looks and feels like a star. He walks out into the front of the audience, they take notice, there's a reaction. And he carries himself so strongly, even to the point where, and I couldn't believe this, but earlier in the night, he did a backstage something or other with somebody. Yeah. And he was so accomplished the way he was talking. And I was like, this is a million miles away from the man we saw in TNA in terms of his confidence and his belief in himself now. I can only imagine that he's got that from his time in Japan. Because he just has it now. It's almost like he's just all of a sudden it's just clicked in his head and he knows what to do and he knows how to do it. But for everyone else, I was like, these guys don't really strike me as special. You know, Seth Rollins, Dean Ambrose, Roman Reigns, Kevin Owens, you know, and certainly Rollins and Owens in particular, fantastic wrestlers, but there was something really lacking from their whole act. And I don't know if they have got the ability, or at least the freedom, let's say, to overcome that right now.
Yeah, I can completely agree with you on AJ. Certainly, we talked about it when he signed with New Japan, and after a couple of months in New Japan, he looked so much better than he ever had done before in his career. You know,
yeah.
And there is an inherent confidence in walking away from the money he was earning in New Japan and on the indie scene to go and risk it in WWE, because WWE is only an opportunity. He could have sank like a stone if they hadn't got it right. And arguably for the first 3 months, they didn't get it right, you know, and there is that confidence in the fact that I don't know how much money he was on for New Japan, but I know how much Carl Anderson was on because he told everybody it was $600,000 a year. So for Carl Anderson, a tag team wrestler, high up the card, but still only a tag team wrestler, AJ Styles must have been knocking on the door of $1 million a year, plus of all the money he was getting from independent bookings for a similar schedule to Carl Anderson. So that's like, you know, if you're taking home $1.5 million a year as a rough estimate, and I have no idea how much it was, to go and sign for WWE, there's a confidence in yourself that you can do the job and you are going to be a top star and you will make yourself a top star. And I think, like you said, it's been the opposite story of Reigns. Turning AJ Styles heel has allowed him to be himself, has given him that freedom, and he can accomplish what he sets out to do.
I think it's also about the fact that over the course of the year, Vince has clearly bought into Styles. You basically, if you're in WWE and Vince doesn't buy into you, you've got no chance. You've got no chance at all. And I don't think initially when Styles went there was any kind of sense of this guy, you know, is got anything. He's small, he's Southern. He's never been in WWE before.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think anything of him. And then he saw his performances and saw the consistency of them, and he saw whenever he gave him something to do, Styles ran with it. And since then, you can tell from the way he has been booked, Vince is high on him. And even to the point where I think Vince might even be looking at him and going, and this sounds a bit of a cliche given what Styles had to do whilst he was at TNA, but I may have found my next Ric Flair, you know, in this guy, in this, this cocky almost star power exuding excellent wrestler who can put, and I've said, been saying this for a little while as well, is that Vince McMahon appreciates good wrestling. He doesn't necessarily think it matters that you are really good at wrestling to be a top star, but he does appreciate it. And if you can be a top star and also be a great wrestler, he will consider you stardust. That's the way he looks at Shawn Michaels, is the way he looks at The Undertaker. And I think he's starting to see that in AJ Styles, which, you know, I would have never believed he could have managed before he went to Japan. I don't think that was on the table whatsoever. But it's an incredible turnaround. And I think AJ Styles had a great year last year from all the reports I've seen. I said I haven't really watched a lot of wrestling. But more than that, he's had a great year because he's still at the top of WWE tree, you know, 1 year after he turned up. And that could have very easily gone completely the other way for him.
Speaking of a former Bullet Club leader, the other one, Finn Balor,
right.
also is certainly within Vince McMahon's ballpark. The push he got when he got to the main roster, even though it was short, unfortunately, because of injury, you know, that was a Vince push. And I know Vince has been obsessed with an Irish world champion in forever. And yeah. I think, you know, he found his man in Finn Balor. Unfortunately, it didn't work out necessarily. Do you think that push is going to sustain when he gets back from injury?
I don't know. I think that the one thing that Vince is wary of is injury. You only have to look at his hesitancy with Daniel Bryan, which was probably founded, really, when you look back at it. And I think that he worries that if Finn Balor... Not that Finn Balor is particularly injury prone or has a history of injuries, but I always think that he is looking at that and going, we gave the guy his big chance and he got injured, he got himself injured. I'm not saying he did get himself injured, but I wonder if that's what's going through Vince's mind. I think if he's going to get the push again, I think they should leave it until after WrestleMania. I think he should stay off of television until after WrestleMania. I think right now he's going to get lost in the shuffle. There's lots of stuff going on. You've got The Undertaker coming back for the Royal Rumble. You've got Lesnar and Goldberg. I'm sure Triple H will face Rollins, I expect. And you've got Roman Reigns and John Cena and Kevin Owens and all the other people to fit on that show.
Mm.
I think he's far better off waiting until after WrestleMania, the night after WrestleMania even, and, you know, facing down whoever is the WWE Universal Champion that night and saying, look, that's my belt. I never lost that belt.
Yeah,
it's very simple storytelling, but it would get people jacked the night after WrestleMania and give people a reason to tune in the next week, which is always the problem I find with WWE when it comes to the night after WrestleMania. It doesn't really give you a lot of reason to stay tuned in. It sort of closes the book on everything you've just seen. And for example, a couple of years ago, Lesnar did that killer angle on Raw where he beat the hell out of Michael Cole and beat the hell out of some referees and some cameramen and goodness knows who else. And then he was suspended, and it was like, that's us explaining why you're not going to see Brock Lesnar for the next 3 or 4 months. And you're like, well, you know, that's crazy. Look at, and you know, going back to what New Japan have done, you know, just after Wrestle Kingdom this year with the return of Suzuki Gun, you know, that's what you want, is you want people going, oh, I've got to see what's next because these guys have just turned up or that's happened, and it's laid the foundation for the next, you know, the next big thing. So, you know, I guess in summary, in terms of WWE, I think that I'm intrigued by the Royal Rumble. I think they've done a good job this year of saying, look, we've got a bit of an open field, and I think they may make a mistake too often with this in sort of making it too obvious who's going to win. I like the fact that there's a lot of people who could potentially win it, but I agree with you. Obviously, the same problems exist. They need some stars that are going to be there on a regular basis, day to day. The Raw rating is, I think, somewhere around the 2.7 million mark, where I think it started at the year. I think the highest rating they did this year was something like 4 million. I think at the beginning of the year it was something like 3.5 million on average. It's now about 2.6 on average, or 2.8 on average, I think. It's dropped to levels previously unheard of. A certain amount of that can be blamed on the environment they work in now, but not enough for it to not be clear that they have lost unnaturally a lot of viewers as well.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, there's the age-old problem of we all watch different media now, and, you know, the media landscape has certainly changed, but not that much.
No, I mean, look, the rating as it is now is quite a lot down on what it was this time last year, and quite a lot down, and that was quite a lot down on what it was the year before that, and that was quite a lot down on what it was the year before that. For all those 4 years since 2013, or at least since 2014, you've had the network, you've had Netflix, you've had Love Film, you've had Amazon Prime, you've had all these other, you know, TiVo, Sky Plus, yeah. Mm-hmm. These things have all existed during that time, and the football season was on, and all these other things also happened. So those things can only explain a small amount of that decrease, and most of that decrease has come from the fact that people have turned away because the show has just not been good enough.
Okay, I do want to move on to New Japan, but before we leave WWE, there's the British tournament this weekend,
yeah.
And there's a lot been talk all about the politics of the British wrestling scene lately. Mm-hmm. What do you feel about the tournament, and what do you feel it's going to do for British wrestling, or is it going to do anything for British wrestling?
I don't think it'll do anything for British wrestling. It'll do something for some of the talent, which is a positive. You know, I think it's great to see Tyler Bate, Pete Dunne, Trent Seven getting their opportunity. Mark Andrews is on it, which I think is great. I saw when that was announced, I did tweet out, you know, that this is a guy who, in my opinion, absolutely deserves it. If you've ever met Mark Andrews, you will know that he's not just a class act in the ring. He is a really lovely guy, and deserves every success he gets. And so it's great to see those guys getting their opportunity. I don't think it will make any difference to the industry.
Hmm.
I think the people who are going to watch these shows are people who are already aware of what's going on the UK scene. You know, I think even people in America who watch these shows will be aware of what's going on in the UK scene. You know, there's a big demand for British wrestling stars right now. Obviously, Ospreay, Marty Scurll's doing amazing things in you know, PWG and Ring of Honor. You know, we've had Jack Gallagher and Big Damo and Nikki Storm all turn up in WWE as well this year, Noam Dar as well. So people are well aware of what's going on. I think the people who watch it will be people who probably already dipped their toes a little bit anyway. Ultimately, I don't think it will do an awful lot for the British wrestling scene. On Twitter, I've made out that I think it's going to be a really bad thing. I don't think this tournament will be a really bad thing, but I worry that WWE's interest in the British market is a bad thing. That's what I worry about.
Yeah, that's the same concern for me, really, especially if we have, you got WCPW, you've got IWC, RevPro, Progress, all these companies are doing fantastic things, and it's a finite market, you know, and we've seen what happens when WWE decides it's going to take over somewhere before. They're doing okay in Japan, but they're not doing as well as New Japan Pro Wrestling are at the moment. Obviously, the big Wrestle Kingdom show the other week. You've seen it now after me goading you on Twitter. What did you think of the show, first of all?
Well, let me go back to the WWE UK thing for just a second, because I think the thing for me is people are very cynical that WWE even care or know what's going on in the UK scene. And I think that in order to see what's going on, you only have to look at the timing of some of the things they do. You know, the timing of when they suddenly had this WWE UK show shortly after World of Sport was announced.
Yeah.
The timing of when the show is. It's on the same day as a Progress show, which is not very far down the road in Birmingham. The timing of when they finally released the WWE Network in this country was the same day ICW put their on-demand service out. These timings are not coincidences. No. You know, they're really not coincidences. And as you said, we've seen what WWE do in the past when they want the market to themselves. The problem I have is that what will happen is they'll come in, they'll attempt to take the market for themselves, and then as soon as they've got it, they'll just abandon it.
Yeah.
And you won't have any wrestling anymore because it'll have to build itself up once more. So that's where I'm concerned. Look, if it's just this tournament and then they do it once a year, well, that's fine. That's not going to make a big problem. But I hope that's all it is, put it that way.
Okay.
Japan, New Japan, Wrestle Kingdom was a wonderful show. It was magnificent. Wrestle Kingdom 10 that I watched last year was a wonderful, wonderful show as well. I did have, though, a little bit of something to bring up with you about some of what you said on the podcast about Wrestle Kingdom, mainly about the attendance figures.
Yeah.
Because I was having a look at this because I was like, I want to as good as the show was, I want to see how much New Japan really have, I guess, what's the word, recovered from the exodus of talent they had at the beginning of last year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what, actually, what you said wasn't wrong. It was absolutely true. This year's Wrestle Kingdom was a higher attendance than last year's. You also said that Wrestle Kingdom 9 was the highest attendance at a Wrestle Kingdom for quite a while, which is why this year's didn't go as high as that one. But I felt that was ever so slightly misleading, because okay, this year's Wrestle Kingdom, of the 11 Wrestle Kingdoms that there have been, was only the sixth highest attendance of all the Wrestle Kingdoms in that time. Yes, Wrestle Kingdom 9, it was the highest it had been for a few years. Wrestle Kingdom 6, for example, did 43,000 people in the Tokyo Dome, paid customers. Wrestle Kingdom 9 did 36,000. This year's did 26,000, which is only 1,000 more than last year. So it wasn't like a huge build year. It's only a very small one. So I think to suggest that New Japan is in this sort of great boom period, and I'm not saying this is what you were suggesting, but it just, you kind of, I guess the way you presented the figures were just a little bit more...
I was presenting
tinted than really they really were, if you see what I mean.
I was presenting the figures as there's potential there for them to get bigger, rather than saying they're this is it, because you know New Japan have been famous for papering figures for a long time. Those big sellout shows in the 90s were probably around about 55,000, you know, and the 64,000 they did hit several times with full out selling customers, probably in the UWFI feud. But generally speaking, since then, up until I think it was 2013, where they said, we're not going to give you papered figures anymore, we're going to give you the actual numbers. So it's hard to get accurate figures prior to Wrestle Kingdom 7 or so. So yeah, I wouldn't say necessarily that they are in a boom period. They're not, but they are starting to claw back to where they were.
Well, the other thing I wanted to do, because I remember we spoke about a little bit about this last time, and you told me that the other shows were booming, you know, around the country, really.
Yeah.
So I had a look at some of the other shows over the last 5 years. So I'm talking G1 Final, talking about Dominion, I'm talking about Wrestling Dontaku, I'm talking about New Japan Cup. And the figures, not entirely, but pretty much say the same sort of thing, which is that the figures are up on last year, but compared to 2012, 2013, 2014, not in the greatest place. So it is interesting to me that, and you know, actually you'd expect that if you've had an exodus and then suddenly, you know, you've built up some new stars, it's going to take some time for that to gain some real traction. Mm-hmm. But I also think that it's worth not going overboard on exactly how successful this show was. It was very successful in terms of an art form. As an art form, it was a magnificent show, possibly the best ever. But in terms of success-wise, let's wait and see. And, you know, again, I think it was said that there was 10,000 new subscribers. I think Meltzer may have reported that recently.
That was Steve Corino on the show.
Okay, Steve Corino said it. And I think Alex Edwards said that meant that they reckoned that it was around 60,000 subscribers to New Japan World. When I first heard the numbers for New Japan World, I think it was sort of mid-2015, there was like 22,000 subscribers. Yeah. I was stunned by how low it was.
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree with you.
And I thought, wow, that doesn't suggest the kind of giant that I always imagined New Japan was. And I never knew. I didn't know really a lot about the business side of Japanese wrestling.
Mm.
But when you consider a company that, you know, 2 years ago at Wrestle Kingdom drew 36,000 people, you'd have thought that at the same time they would have at least four times as many subscribers to New Japan World, and yet they had less. They had sort of less than the number of people who went to Wrestle Kingdom, which I find fascinating and strange and crazy, but very interesting. So, you know, I think that really highlights the gap that we're talking about. When I think you guys were talking about, you know, New Japan potentially coming to America and sort of maybe starting to take the war back to WWE. I like the idea, I really do, but it's not even slightly their chance that they're going to do that. You know, they're obviously going to come to the US, run some shows. It'll grow their exposure in that country, and that's a great thing. But it's going to take, if not decades, then a decade to build an audience that's even slightly close to challenging anything WWE does at the moment.
I quite agree with you. I do think they have a better chance of expanding the market in Asia. They're already well into Thailand.
Totally agree.
You know, yeah. the China market is the great untapped market left. India seems to be doing pretty well, and they'll take any wrestling they can find. So, you know, and it's surprising to me that there hasn't been a larger promotion come out of India apart from Rocky King, other than the WWE presence that's there. But in Asia, then New Japan definitely has the foothold on the market and has a much better chance of getting a foothold on the market because it's culturally closer to what WWE do. You're right in the sense of, I mean, I did precurse it with they have a long way to go when we were talking about this war. And certainly, you know, on their home market, they're facing more competition now because, after all, Japan have been in the doldrums forever. They've found their feet. Yo Nakayama's changed the entire philosophy of the company. They've gone off of signed contracts. So they're using freelancers, BJW and K-Dojo, and are doing lots of cross-promotion with them to give them, a roster. So, you know, it's that they've lost a lot of Japan has lost a lot of it's more stable because they're not having to pay out big contract money all the time,
so they're doing
okay financially because they've got a much stronger base than they used to have, because essentially BJW, K-Dojo and those companies are taking the risk because they've got the contracted workers, and All Japan are using the guys that they regularly use on nightly deals. It's a similar system that Paris de Mal in Mexico have been using for years, you know, because Paris de Mal was originally a faction. The Paraguayo Jr., the late lamented Paraguayo Jr., left CMLL to form a separate company to do an NWO type angle, and the company ended up being really quite successful, so they just left. Which is, you know, one of those weird things about imitating life, where Paris de Mal, and they ran the principle of, we'll pay you nightly. We'll set up big angles with the guys we know we're staying. So anyone who was leaving AAA and going to CMLL had a place to go. And so they got some quite big stars, and it's been very successful turning them into a third major in Mexico, really. And that's really what All Japan have done in Japan. Noah are in trouble at the minute, since they're just going to take them a while to find their feet. Dragon Gate are doing very, very well, as they always seem to do. Dragon Gate seems to be kind of separate from the rest of the wrestling industry in Japan. They're always doing shows in 5,000-6,000 seaters. They've got, you know, they've got a tight core group of guys. It's a bit like wrestling used to be in the 90s. Their guys don't seem to go anywhere else. They're quite happy to stay in one company all the way through, which says an awful lot for that company. Yeah. So, you know, the wrestling scene in Japan is not as hot as it was, but it's got the potential to get hotter. If New Japan do want to think about a more worldwide audience, certainly they have a greater worldwide appeal because they're so different to the WWE product or other products around the world. So it's interesting to see where they're going to go with this. And Kodani has clearly stated that he wants to take the battle to the WWE. That's the reason why we talked about it. Is this feasible? Is it viable? And you're right, from an artistic point of view, yes, it is. From a financial point of view, I'm not quite so sure yet. They need more penetration, but I think they should be going after the markets that are untapped rather than trying to take market away from somebody else.
I completely agree. I think that their much better tactic would be going after the Asian markets. And the other reason is because they have the chance to set the culture of what wrestling can be in those countries.
Mm, yeah.
So if they sort of lay it down and educate those audiences and say, this is what wrestling is, and then the WWE come along and try to win those audiences, they're going to fail because they'll be like, well, we know what wrestling is. It's New Japan. It's not this stuff. The same way as the Japanese audiences in the main have not taken to the WWE product in the same way as, you know, perhaps some American people have taken to the New Japan product. It's not quite. I think that was one of the reports that came out from Meltzer recently, was there are more American subscribers to New Japan World than there are Japanese subscribers to the network, which is very interesting. So I think they have a chance to sort of educate those fans that this is wrestling. So when WWE come along, they aren't excited by it, or they're like, well, that's not as good. You know, see what I mean? So,
yeah, which is essentially what WWE did in Europe.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a far better tactic than trying to go into America. And I think also, James, I mean, I guess the reason I wanted to make that the point I made is that you guys, understandably, were waxing lyrical about New Japan Wrestle Kingdom. It was an amazing show. And, you know, especially, I think, especially if you are into New Japan, you understand these stories, you followed them right the way through, and you enjoy those characters and you're on a journey with those people, and then you land in that place and you see those four last matches, you are going to want to wax lyrical. And as a consequence, the tone that was set, even when talking about this, was, oh, well, they're going to take over the world. Not that that's what you were saying, but it just sounded, it came across that way. And I just sort of thought, Let's bring some reality to that perspective, shall we? Great show, fantastic show, but there's a long way to go. And also, let's be a bit more analytical when it comes to the success of the show itself, in terms of, yes, artistically it was very successful. Commercially, was it as successful as perhaps New Japan would have liked? And I question whether it was. I think they probably would have wanted a little bit more than they got in terms of attendance. Having said that, 10,000 boost... 10,000 subscriber boost to New Japan World, given that only middle of 2015 they had 22,000 subscribers, is actually nothing to be sniffed at either. So
no,
they've done pretty well there. So yeah, it was just interesting. And you know, I enjoyed the show. I really enjoyed the show. I even could get through Yano because his tag team partner was Ishii, and Ishii is my favorite New Japan wrestler.
There you go.
I was like, well, okay, they put the worst guy along with the best guy. So it's all good. It's fine. So we got through it because of Ishii, basically.
Well, there you go. Okay, then. Well, let's move on to TNA and new ownership.
Oh, I forgot about them.
Oh, yeah, as everyone does. Yeah. New ownership of TNA is Anthem, which is the parent company of Fight TV, which hosts TNA in Canada and also hosts a couple of British wrestling companies, ICW and NGW as well, which you can also find on WrestlePlus. New owners coming in. We've had a bit of a clean sweep of the front office. Dave Lagana's gone. Dixie Carter's gone. Billy Corgan obviously left a while ago, which I thought was a real shame because he'd finally found his feet as a booker and the show was actually watchable. to put it bluntly, it was not, oh my God, they've done it again. And so the show has a different feel now. It was still on the hangover. We had one episode of the new team, which I watched this week, and it wasn't bad, but then again, they're kind of running off the storylines that already existed. So long as they close those storylines off okay, then they shouldn't have done too badly. But it's the new storylines that we're probably not going to see for a month or so, and how they develop is going to be the tricky part for the transition from one ownership to the other. Now, me and you have done enough shows about the relaunch of TNA in the last 3 years between the Squash and the Troopany show to fill several hours of podcasting. So what do you feel the new company has to do? And I feel like I've asked you this question at least four times before.
I think what TNA is going to become is, or you know, did you know, for example, you probably know, but I don't know if a lot of people listening know, that... Alex Shane and Dave Bradshaw are the commentators, the European commentators for New Japan and AAA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I don't know where their show airs. I don't think it airs at all in Britain, but I think it airs on the Fight Network as well in Canada. I think it probably airs quite a lot of different markets across the world, but just not, I don't think they air in the UK.
Yeah.
Now, that show exists, basically, the show that they commentate on doesn't really follow any stories. It doesn't really follow even titles and things. It's just some random matches put onto a television show, basically.
A bit like the Access show in the States.
Kind of, but with less narrative, less
mm-hmm.
care to what they've actually... It's not created by, you know, Alex Shane. They just do the commentary for it. Somebody else creates the show itself. And it exists basically to give people the chance to watch wrestling matches. And that's it. There's no other purpose behind it. It's sort of half an hour or an hour of wrestling matches that you can watch if you like wrestling.
Yeah.
Basically. Mm-hmm. I think that's how Impact is going to exist from now on. I don't think you're going to get this sense of a happening, important wrestling show that you have to see, a destination show that you have to see. Like... we have come to know wrestling over the last 20 years since the Attitude Era. We've come to know it as, I have to make an appointment with Raw, with Nitro, with Impact, with whatever, because that's the next chapter in the story I've been following for however long.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think they still will have stories and it still will be episodic. I just don't think it will be, we are building to Bound for Glory or we are building to the next big title match. It will be more, it will exist in, I think, the Fight Network's eyes as something where they will attract X thousand people to watch the show. And that's pretty much it. And I think, and what I mean by that is I don't think they'll be putting in huge amounts of investment. Mm. I don't think they're going to try and pour in loads of money to create this new marketing campaign that will bring loads of fans back in. Similarly to the way Ring of Honor runs their business, in fairness, you know, they don't really push heavily. They haven't got like a big marketing push to get you to watch Ring of Honor. You'll learn about Ring of Honor's existence and you'll either, when you watch it for the first time, you'll either like it or you won't, and that's the end of it, really.
Yeah.
Mm. Sinclair Broadcasting like it because it fills times on their television channels, basically.
Yeah.
And that's essentially what Fight Network are going to do with TNA, I think. So it will fill 2 hours of television every week. They'll also have the back catalogue and they can just, it'll give them lots and lots of content to put onto their network, which will allow them, obviously, to just show people wrestling. There's nothing wrong with that, but I think it makes TNA not redundant, but not really very relevant either. And I do believe that's the way it's going to be. I don't want to call TNA, I think TNA have been a bit irrelevant for a while, to be honest, but I think in this, was for the first time in a long while, I wouldn't be surprised if the actual goal of the company is to just, let's just keep the fans we've got, keep them tuning in. We're not going to overhaul it massively. We're not going to make it massively brilliant. We are just going to present a wrestling show every week. And we're also going to have this quite big now back catalogue of video library.
Yeah.
That we can show on our television channel.
Yeah, I mean, it does interest me. I was talking to a couple of people on Twitter, and one thing that they did mention was the fact that there has been virtually no publicity for the new TNA, essentially, network. You know, yeah. The only way you can legally watch the show in the UK now is to download the TNA app for $5.99 a month. You get access to the back catalogue of TNA, and I've no idea what the sign-ups are. I think I saw numbers in the less than a couple of thousand. You know, it's not good as far as a business model is concerned, because they need, if they want to continue in the way they had done, then they need that penetration. We've got no, as far as we know, we've got no UK tour this year, which was a big cash cow for TNA. So it's, and that partly comes down to the fact that British wrestling scene's so hot. Why would you go and watch TNA when you could go watch Progress or ICW or Rev Pro or NGW or any of a number of wrestling promotions that do a very good job in the UK? And partly it's down to the fact that they haven't got the investment that they used to have, because it costs a lot of money to run tours that good.
It does. You know, it does. I also say about the UK tour, I want to dispel a few myths about that as well. Because, yes, it was their biggest tour of the year. They would, you know, play in one of the biggest audiences of the year. But certainly the last 2 or 3 years actually have been heavily papered. Heavily.
Yeah.
They haven't been getting the same level of ticket sales as they previously did in the first 3-4 tour, Maximum Impact tours. And ultimately, the value of it was decreasing. It wasn't as, you know, I don't even know. I've never considered it a cash cow necessarily, but I'd certainly say it was something that was valuable to them to do. I think it was becoming less and less valuable, and I think obviously I would say, and this is probably the best place to say it, is that, for example, Challenge TV have probably been in the last couple of years of the opinion that they're getting rid of their portfolio of wrestling shows.
Yeah,
we know obviously WrestleTalk TV left the air. That was through, I don't know what happened, I wasn't part of WrestleTalk anymore by that point. But the point is that it wouldn't surprise me if that was all part of a sort of stepped plan to remove wrestling from their from their channel. Because they decided that at that point they maybe thought, well, wrestling's done. You know, it was good, it was a TNA Impact on Challenge was a big, big ratings getter for them for a number of years. It wasn't as big as it was in the last few years.
No,
was that.
No, it didn't. It cracked the top 10 three times last year.
Yeah, and I think previously it was like number one every week.
Yeah.
Like it was the number one show on Challenge. So, you know, I think because of those things, I think ultimately the UK tour just slowly became less of a money spinner for them. and probably started to cost them more money than it was worth. And as you've said, and I hadn't even thought of that, you're absolutely right. They've kind of launched their new app, which has not really been any promotion for. No. In fact, if you think about, imagine TNA's ownership changing hands 18 months ago, it would have been a far bigger story in wrestling than it has been.
Yeah.
I think it's been a very muted story given that it's changed hands, and yet we have heard very little about it. You know, it's very interesting how it's gone very quiet.
Yeah, I mean, TNA have had this habit in the past of when the rest of the wrestling world's hot, they leave things alone. So like Wrestle Kingdom weekend, WrestleMania weekend, they won't announce anything. They won't talk about anything because I suppose it's smart in one sense, the spotlight's elsewhere. Release news when it's quiet. But it just, like, there was no fanfare. You know, there was that god-awful logo, and that was about it.
That is the worst logo ever. I mean, that's the, you know, if you haven't seen it, you've got to seek it out just to see how bad it is.
Someone really okayed that.
Yeah. I'm not even joking. I almost took a photo of this. I went past where I live. There's a sort of community centre just next to the train station, and it has got a blue bird type thing over a top of words in the logo, and I was like, this looks like the TNA new logo. It's just ridiculous. It looks, I was like, that's how bad it is. It's just, yeah, it's just absolutely dreadful. I don't know what whoever was thinking did that. And again, it speaks to a kind of, it doesn't really matter what the logo looks like, guys, we just want content.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, there is talk of Jeff Jarrett and Dutch Mantel coming back. That is only rumours. No one has actually confirmed anything that yet. And they were a perfectly competent booking team.
Yeah.
The shows they were writing were at TNA's peak period. If they've got the talent, which I think they have to make those shows work again, well, obviously they're not going to write the same thing again, but, you know, Dutch has a good sense of how to make things work. He wrote the Knockouts division in the mid-2000s, which made it, like, the most watchable women's promotion in North America for a long time. So it's if they get that kind of talent to be able to write the show, it will tick along quite nicely. I don't think it's necessarily a good idea for talent, because if you're not building to major blow-offs, whether it's on pay-per-view or on TV, then talent have no reason to have up and down, if you see what I mean. You know, there is no way of saying, I was a draw here, and here's why I was a draw, and that's why you should pay me more money, because I was a draw for this event, and I was drew these TV ratings, and this is the reason why I'm good.
I think that when it comes to that, I mean, don't get me wrong, I think they'll still build to matches. Of course they will. They'll still have storylines which build to a conclusion, and you'll have a championship match, and it's between the two big stars of the company. But it just won't be pushed out there to be like, God, oh, you've got to see this. You know, like, Bound for Glory used to be promoted as a big deal in the wrestling calendar. I don't think you'll see that anymore. I think basically TNA will continue to exist week on week, and it will not be... I think if there are podcasts out there that cover all of wrestling, my advice to them would be stop covering TNA, because it's not going to do anything that's going to be particularly interesting. It's just going to exist. It's going to keep working. What the name of the company?
It's Anthem.
Anthem are going to say, how do we make this so that it doesn't cost us? It's not running at a loss. It just gives us money. It just gives us content that we can then monetize through advertising, and that's all it's going to happen. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised to see the likes of the Hardys, for example, leaving TNA, not just because apparently Vince McMahon's interested again, which I can completely understand given the year Matt Hardy's had. Whether you like it or not, I think he's done brilliantly to keep it kayfabe and just play completely straight all the way. But also because I don't think Anthem will be interested in paying their salaries. I think they're looking for cheaper talent than the Hardys.
Certainly, I think, you know, under the prior management team, they would not have been allowed to go to Ring of Honor. Just even to do a promo for Ring of Honor would have been unheard of. You know, this is the first time a signed TNA star has done anything with Ring of Honor since the Feinstein incident in 2003? Probably a bit later than that, 2005, So, you know, this is like 13 years of those two companies being far, far apart and in direct competition, really, in North America for the same kind of wrestling fans, kinda. You know, the Ring of Honor crowd is a crowd that love their wrestling. They want to see good athletic wrestling matches. They're willing to spend money on merch. They're willing to spend money on pay-per-views. They're willing to spend money on stuff. Whereas TNA fans are people who just flick on wrestling once a week and are quite happy with that. And there's nothing wrong with either of those two fan groups, but one is going to be more lucrative for consistent base money coming in, whereas the other one is going to be to the winds of how good your TV show is.
Yeah, I mean, put it this way. AJ Styles is a big star in WWE. Samoa Joe, Bobby Roode, Eric Young, Austin Aries are all in NXT and have probably been exposed to a different audience, if not a bigger audience, although I would suggest it might be slightly bigger than what TNA were previously getting. there are other guys that have had periods in that company, CM Punk, of course, that the casual WWE fan will know. And so Fight Network are going to be like, oh, come watch the best of AJ Styles and TNA.
Yeah.
You know, on their channel. I mean, and they will hope to draw 200,000-300,000 viewers. And that will be all they will care about getting. You know, they're, you know, it won't be like they're trying to get, you know, millions. But that's why they're doing this, is they're saying, right, we now have hours and hours and hours of content that we can use from the past of TNA, and in the meantime, keep building, you know, making new shows, because that will also play into the same thing. And I honestly think that's pretty much all you're going to get from TNA, is this show that exists. It won't be fireworks. It won't be Final Deletion, which you'll be happy with.
Yeah, thank God.
But I think it will be. But it will just be a show. And actually, if you're doing that, I think Dutch Mantel is probably the perfect person to be there. This is a guy who can just create a show that will tick along. He can use all the tropes of the 70s and 80s and 90s that people have forgotten about now.
Yeah.
Reuse everything that's ever happened before that ever worked. And you probably, you know, if all you like is steady, enjoyable 2 hours of wrestling every single week, then you'll probably enjoy TNA. But it won't look to push the boundaries anymore. It won't look to try and push itself out of its zone of these are our fans and that's what we serve.
Yeah, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, you know.
Not necessarily, but it's not how the number two promotion in a country as big as the United States acts. I.e., TNA are no longer the second biggest promotion in the US. I don't know who is though.
I mean, there is really no number two. I mean, Ring of Honor has probably got the most stable model, but they're never going to tear trees down as far as live attendance is concerned, because it's a very niche product.
And they're also in the same rhythm as what TNA, I think, are going for, which is Sinclair are happy that they've got, you know, hours and hours of content of Daniel Bryan, Kevin Owens, CM Punk, Seth Rollins, that they can put on their television networks if they want to at some point in the future, or they can continue to sell DVDs of, because they're now big stars in WWE.
Yeah.
And probably they'll be able to do that for a very long time. There'll probably be new guys that get through, you know, go through and become major stars in WWE in the future. So I think they're in very much, in terms of, forget the people who work for the wrestling company and think about their parent company, those are the ambitions the parent companies have for those companies.
Yeah, I mean, you could say that the reverse model of that is Lucha Underground.
Yeah,
in the sense of they are trying to push every boundary they possibly can, but they haven't necessarily found an audience for it yet. And it is... it's going to be tricky to see if they actually manage to capture the audience they're after. You know, there's been recent talk of the fact that Lucha Underground is not really getting the Latino audience they expected, which is where they thought they'd really have a hit. But I'd argue that you go back to that cultural issue again. If the Latino fans are AAA fans and CMLL fans, they're going to watch that and they're going to stick with that because that's what they've traditionally watched. You know, AAA and CMLL are two very, very different companies. In the sense, AAA is a much more entertainment-based... It's kind of like a Spanish-language WWE in that kind of sense. And CMLL is much more conservative, much more an old-fashioned Lucha Libre show, which it always has been. And they've just refined and perfected that formula over and over and over again. So when you bring in something like Lucha Underground, it isn't necessarily going to appeal to that audience because they already have their wrestling. This is something different. And... Yeah. It is penetrating to a white audience, but not enough necessarily to keep it afloat. They have gone to ITV this year. That's the Apple iTV, not ITV.
I was confused.
Not actual ITV. So they've kind of expanded their audience that way. It's available internationally legally now. But again, this goes back to, I think, something Alex Shane said when he saw the numbers they were asking for on, like, for international distribution. They were kind of looking for kind of like, you know, Breaking Bad kind of numbers, like Orange is the New Black kind of numbers, not, you know, a wrestling show kind of numbers, which has made its international penetration and its international licensing a liability, really. But it costs a lot to do that show because it's full of graphics, it's got a cool set, you have to pay all that talent who are on 7-year contracts, you know, and some of them were unknown people, but guys like Ricochet, who are suddenly very, very well-known people, you know, and it's like they're in demand from indies all over the world, they're in demand from Japan, they're in demand from WWE, they keep getting looked at. So, which is the problem any second or third promotion has, is if you guys become good stars or bigger stars than they were when you started, you're going to attract attention, and not all of it's going to be good attention.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I got to be honest, I'm completely ignorant of the position Lucha Underground are in at the moment. I understand that when they first started on the El Rey Network, the ratings were, again, one of those, you get the numbers and you're like, my goodness, that cannot, they're shockingly small.
Yeah.
I was like 35,000 at, you know, at one point for the first season, I think near the start of the season. I think the second season may have been something like 150,000 or something. I think they got bigger numbers, but I think they've then, as the seasons progressed, got lower numbers. You know, they lost a lot of viewers. And I think ultimately, you're right, it costs a lot of money to make that show. It's not just, it's mainly the production values. They're just such, it's so well made that and it's got those funky camera angles and all kinds of stuff that it was always going to cost a lot of money. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast. So I'm ignorant of where they are right now, but yeah, they were obviously, the talent they've got is also phenomenal. You've got Matt Cross and Ricochet in particular, all over the place these days, working every independent show going. So, you know, yeah. It was, and you know what? It's a great concept. I've never really been keen on it, but I did say last 6 months ago that it may be the one thing that I think is taking wrestling in the right direction because it's creating its own universe.
Yeah. I did say a couple of weeks ago as well that I don't think the Final Deletion would have existed without Lucha Underground first.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, it's having an influence worldwide on pro wrestling, you know, in the very real sense. Like Pentagon Jr. has become a massive star on the US independent scene, you know, and he had literally no chance of being a star. If he'd stayed in AAA forever, that'd been fine, and he made a good living, you know, he'd have done all right, but he wouldn't have had that big hit that he's had, that he's become a wanted man. You know, I was listening to Colt Cabana's podcast today from last week, and he was wrestling on a show in Cleveland with AIW, and they'd booked some big stars in. They booked Pentagon Jr., and the house was full. You know, so it's like he's essentially made an entirely new career halfway through his career as a US independent star, and probably on quite good money because he still lives in Mexico. He doesn't necessarily have to, from a money earning point of view, because he's earning US dollars and taking them back to Mexico, he's earning good money. You know, so it's an interesting point of, like, can you have a wrestling show in this day and age that's well written, well presented, and has athletic, artistic value, and make money with it? Because Lucha Underground is the best wrestling show on TV, but doesn't necessarily make that kind of money because it's kind of falling between two stools. We don't know what the market's trying to appeal to. We assume one market would like it and they didn't, but another market does like it, and that's what they want their wrestling to be because they're not getting it from WWE or TNA or Ring of Honor. So it's partly, I think, possibly because of the watering down of the business since the WWE national expansion, of the fact now that we have these companies that do a thing, you know, rather than, before the expansion, you had Memphis and Texas and New York and Florida and the Carolinas, and they all had their own tweaks, but it was basically the wrestling. You went to see the wrestling. Mm. Whereas now you have all these companies in different pockets, but Chikara, even if you take like Chikara and CZW as the two examples in the Northeast Coast, two companies that do polar opposite things, but they can both exist as small companies in that area. but they aren't necessarily going to be big international or national hits because they are working to such a niche market.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think there's a number of things. I think you can be entirely. One of the things you said on the Wrestle Kingdom podcast, for example, was that in WWE, you could never have a 45 minute main event. I disagree with that. I think WWE could put on a 45 minute main event. I think they could do it regularly. I think they could do it a couple of times a year, once a WrestleMania, once some other point in the calendar, because they've got complete freedom to do whatever the hell they want. They can do. This is my big issue last 6 months ago on the podcast. The last time I was here was that they have the complete control to do whatever they want. They have complete control to present anybody the way they want them to make them say whatever they want them to make them look as good or bad as they want them to. They have complete control over the entire universe that they exist in. They could do anything. So I think you could have, you know, high-end, high art wrestling, and WWE could even serve it up. Their appetite to do so is not there, but they could do that. They are in a position where, you know, I mean, I think, again, looking back at the Attitude Era, for example, there's no way that 2-3 years before the Attitude Era, you could have had Austin doing the things he was doing. It took them a couple of years to educate and to tweak their product to sort of prepare their own audience for what they were going to do. You know, you can go back, you can almost just trace it back to, I think, In Your House 4 when Goldust debuted. Every single pay-per-view from that point on, they do something to almost hint at where they're going. Goldust debuts in Your House 4. Diesel puts Bret Hart for a table at Survivor Series 95. Yeah. Bret Hart and David Boy Smith have a bloodbath at In Your House 5. Royal Rumble 96, Diesel flicks the, you know, flips the bird at The Undertaker. And slowly they're just building towards where they're going. And so they can still do that. You know, 6-7 years ago, would WWE have been having main event matches that were very similar to the independent style wrestling main event matches of that time? They probably couldn't have got away with it, but they do it all the time now. That's their regular style. So they can do it. It will take some conditioning of their audience, but that's what they've always done. They've always conditioned their audience to go the way they want them to go. So I think it's possible. I think the problem is that getting penetration in a market that's so dominated by WWE to the point where when you say, back in the 80s, people used to go to the wrestling.
Yeah.
People see the wrestling as WWE.
Yeah,
that's the problem. It's not that it's high art or it's presented in a different way or whatever. It's just that it's not WWE doing it. And unfortunately, they will for the imaginable future, they will continue to be that way. And there's no real getting away from that.
So what's the positives? We're on a positive note. What's the positives about wrestling now?
Well, you know, there's lots of positives. Before we get to the positives, you know how I like to go back a step. I want to be a bit brutal to Ring of Honor. Is that right?
Yep, feel free.
Mainly because I feel like their relationship with New Japan is the only thing that keeps them relevant.
That's not something I would disagree with either.
Because I don't hear anything about Ring of Honor anymore, except for when they are in conjunction with New Japan. I think they still have great wrestlers. I think Kyle O'Reilly, who apparently is potentially
not any longer now.
I think he's wonderful. I thought he was wonderful the first time I saw him on a New Japan show. That's the point. I think especially with New Japan becoming more available in America at the moment, it just seems to be marginalizing Ring of Honor more and more, because I don't particularly like the Ring of Honor wrestling style. I don't like the fact that, you know, every single match, it takes about 75 different finishing maneuvers to actually win a match. I don't particularly like that style. And not only that, but it's great to see that athletic style, but New Japan are better at it as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, I feel like whilst it's the one thing keeping them relevant, it's also the thing that could eventually be their undoing, because if New Japan really are going to expand and going to be more available in America than they are currently, that can probably only be a bad thing for Ring of Honor more than WWE. So, I mean, look, I guess I've got to the point where I feel like Ring of Honor it's had its day, it's had its peak, and it's still popular. It still has, I'm sure it still turns a profit, still does what Sinclair Broadcasting wants to do.
but I don't see it as being this important promotion that it was once for a number of years.
Yeah, it's not the game changer it used to be.
No, it's not. Positives. There are lots of positives. The first show that I saw after Final Deletion
was when I went to the Brixton Academy to watch Progress. We're going to need a bigger room again. That was the first show I saw after Final Deletion. Obviously, very different from that show. I bought tickets quite a long time before because I bought them for my friend's birthday. And we went, and it was an excellent show. I didn't think it was quite as good as people made out, but it was an excellent show. I think where I have struggled with Progress for a brief while, especially that particular show, was I just didn't feel the build was as good as Progress were capable of. They did that wonderful Jimmy Havoc storyline, which I've waxed lyrical about before. And then when he lost the title, I felt like Progress went off the rails a little bit in terms of their stories. They weren't telling the stories as well. I think Marty Scurll's title reign was great, but I just didn't feel like he had the backing of the story in the same way as they previously had done.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then just recently, in the last 2-3 months, they found it again. And it's been excellent to watch again. It's just been wonderful. Just recently, the Chapter 41 show, where they didn't announce anybody before the show, so they could easily have phoned it in.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a sort of the reuniting of the Swords of Essex and Will Ospreay's heel turn on Jimmy Havoc. They had an appearance of the leaders in the New School. Marty Scurll and Zack Sabre Jr. teamed up for the first time in a very long time, and certainly in Progress. And just recently, obviously, they had Pete Dunne win the Progress Championship, and he and Trent Seven and Tyler Bate are in a sort of faction now. And the promo they did when they talked about the Progress being a stepping stone to the WWE, or they actually said to New York or no Florida or Tokyo. It's very difficult to think of WWE being based in Florida rather than New York.
I think in NXT rather than going to the main roster.
Well, yeah,
showing a lack of ambition there, sure.
Well, definitely. And I thought that was great. So I just think they are back on it in terms of this sense of the narrative in Progress is always for me what set it apart. That and what has to be the coolest branding in all of wrestling. I mean, that is the true genius of Progress. I don't care what anyone says. The branding of Progress. I remember seeing the Progress logo in 2013, middle of 2013.
Yeah.
I watched and I looked at them and thought, what is this about? There's something about this. This looks very exciting. And the fact that they called their shows Chapters, and the fact that they had a staff at the time as a title. I watched Chapter 8, 9, and 10 around about that time, and that was when Jimmy Havoc first turned heel. And I just thought, this seems like the perfect wrestling promotion at that time. And so much of that was about the branding. And that's kind of a big theme for me at the moment. So I'm watching New Japan, for example. I think one of the big things they've got going for them is the fact that people look at New Japan and it's almost got an automatic seal of approval because it's New Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like the show becomes better, even if the show wasn't great, the show becomes better just because it's New Japan doing it. So you kind of feel like it has to be better than you imagine it is sometimes, I think, as well.
Yeah, no, I've seen shows that I looked at them the first time, I thought that was amazing, and then looked at the second time, I was like, it's not up to the last month's. Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, it just has that seal of approval. And you know, if you compare, for example, Progress with Rev Pro, I would say arguably Rev Pro have better wrestling matches on their their shows.
Because that's their thing.
Yeah, and that's what they do. And Progress have better stories, sure. But if you're looking purely from a wrestling perspective, Rev Pro is probably just a tad better, but Rev Pro has not got a tenth of the quality of the branding that Progress has got, and that's for me where the genius comes in. And again, branding is a big deal when it comes to TNA.
Yeah, yeah.
As Alex Edwards said on your show a couple of weeks ago, it's that branding. The brand is dead. It's been destroyed. It's never coming back. No one's ever going to look at the initials TNA and think,
I really need to watch that. And it doesn't matter how good the show gets, it's not going to be, no one's going to start watching it again. It's TNA. It's the brand is destroyed and there's no getting it back.
No, you're right. There's been too much talk about, there's been too many muck-ups and there's been too many, let's announce a tour to China. Oh no, we have to cancel it. Oh, let's announce a tour to India. Oh no, we're touring where terrorists are. We can't go there. Oh, we've signed this. No, we haven't signed this person. It's just been that over and over again. No matter how good the show is, you know it was run by idiots.
Yeah.
Essentially. Yeah. And that's the success was despite the fact they were mismanaging a wrestling company. And the amount of money they had and the talent they had, that ongoing narrative for people who are either inside the industry or are looking at the industry like us, you know, the average Impact fan that watched on a Sunday night on Challenge didn't care. They turned on the telly, they enjoyed the wrestling, and that was it. They only thought about that for 2 hours and they were done. But to everybody else who puts money into that company or who's advising people to put money into that company, it isn't going to work. And you're right, that's why Progress is a success, is because it's well-branded. And you can go to a show and have a really good time because Jim Smallman encourages you to have a good time, you know. And I can't get over enough, and I talk about this all the time on Twitter, in articles, everywhere, but that first rule of Progress, don't be a dick, is such an important thing to the company because everyone's a family. We're all there to enjoy it and have a good time.
I'm going to annoy some people, though, in this respect, because I actually find that to be a difficult thing to stomach, the don't be a dick ethos.
Right.
Okay. Because I actually think that they can be dicks sometimes. And I think what happens is that the don't be a dick has kind of become a don't criticize us ever.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not just them, it's not just the promotion that kind of has this sort of overriding feeling of when they're saying that, that's what they're really saying. It's also, it manifests itself in people who watch Progress also never wanting anyone to criticize them ever. So, and don't get me wrong, I really like Progress. I've loved Progress for, you know, what was it now, 2017. It's going to be nearly 3 years now. About 3 years I've been watching Progress, right? The first time I went to one of their shows was this year, but I've been watching them for a very long time. I have loved some of the stuff they've done. I've raved about some of the stuff they've done, but I do feel like sometimes there's a sense that that don't be a dick is actually them almost being a little bit like, please don't, just don't criticize us ever. No, forget the shows. That's great. I don't want, you know, everyone should play along at the shows. That's what I'd much rather see than anything else. But it's then later on, any sense of criticism or even questioning about something becomes, I've seen it occasionally become a big deal for them, and it's almost like, oh, you're being a dick, and it's like, it's kind of a catch-all for anything we don't like, we're gonna just say you're being, you know. So that's the only thing I'd say, but that was just me going off on a random thing. I think, look, it's a great promotion, there's some great stuff, I think the stories are fantastic, the wrestling's really good, and I think the presentation's amazing. You can really, you're in the crowd and the atmosphere is fantastic, and yeah, it's a great promotion, and I think that's where I think where we left it last time was that British wrestling for me was the positive that I come to, and I do again. I think that it's still very exciting. I don't know what's going to happen next. You know, ICW just did what, 7,000-8,000 people. In November. I mean, that is just insane. I mean, that's and don't, you can bet if there's any one thing WWE are really worried about, as worried as they might be about What Culture, they are pooing themselves about ICW. This is a company that actually draws a crowd. You know, like no other promotion in the world other than New Japan draws crowds as big as ICW.
They are essentially suppose CMLL draw 10,000 every
apologies.
Week.
Apologies, the Mexican promotions.
You're still saying a company based out of Glasgow that essentially only really tours the north of England is the fifth biggest wrestling company in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's right up there. And, you know, TNA have never drawn a crowd as big as ICW drew in November. ICW of now, not just, you're right, they mainly are in Glasgow, really. That's really where they mainly are.
Yeah.
But the last 2 years, they've been doing tours right across the country. The end of last year, they came to Bristol for the first time. They are doing television tapings next this year
in Newcastle, Bristol. I think they're going to possibly to Birmingham, to London. They're doing television tapings now in other cities. This is not, you know, this is not your average independent promotion. This is a massive, this is becoming a big operation now. I'm not even a big fan of the ICW product, and I am so impressed by how they have done business-wise.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I just keep going back to that. It's an amazing thing they've done. And there are other lots and lots of other great wrestling promotions, of course. I think the real explosion now has been Progress at Brixton, ICW drawing 8,000 in Glasgow, the fact that they're doing the Square Go in Newcastle, What Culture coming on the scene and drawing, you know, a couple of thousand fans to some shows this year, and obviously World of Sport being on New Year's Eve, which I've been trying to hold back on. On Twitter, people have sort of criticized me a couple of times because I've tried to actually look at the viewing figure and figure out in my own head, make some kind of analysis on whether I think they will actually get a series. At the moment, I don't think they will. I would be surprised if they did, based on the viewing figures of, I think, 1.2 million, which is an overnight figure, didn't include TiVo and goodness knows what else, Sky Plus, didn't include the ITV hub. But ultimately, 1.2 million, 7% share of the audience, and that's the key, 7% share on a Saturday evening between 5 and 7 is not going to be enough, I don't think, for them to be convinced that this could be a hit. But the show itself was very good. I thought the show itself was a bit campy. I think there will be a lot of people, you know, I'm sure there are lots of people watching going, this is absolutely rubbish, because it was very family-based. I hated the ITV-style crowd manipulation. I cannot stand ITV's general production, so it was nothing to do with wrestling. I just don't like their production in general.
No, I'm with you on that, yeah.
But in terms of the budget and the way it looked really good. It looked like it could be a Saturday night tea time show, no problem. I think the standalone story over the course of the evening was actually about as textbook as you can make it, you know?
Yeah.
You've got a episode long storyline which involves everybody on the show because they all have matches to get into a battle royal. They have the special surprise of the British Bulldog, Harry Smith. They got Grado over as far as they could. The only one perhaps criticism I'd say is that they ought to have given him a little bit of extra time on the mic, because that's where his real gold is.
Is
on the mic and as a character. But other than that, I thought they got him over big time. I think if you've got 2 hours and you've got a wrestling show and you each week you set out to make someone, you don't want to make too many people in one go. They made Grado that night. I thought it was very well done. All together, very well done. But I am cynical about whether it'll get a series, and I really hope I'm wrong.
Oh yeah, no, the Troopany Show crew have a Twitter conversation, as you've probably heard us talk about on the show. Like Chelsea was trying to find an illegal version, because obviously she couldn't find one in the UK because she's in the US, to watch it just to see what the buzz was about, because she'd heard a lot about it from her British friends, and me and the other Alexes were like, this is really good. And then we get the numbers and it's like, these numbers don't match up to what we saw. You know, it's not quite there. It's tantalizingly close to what it should be. That, like, the show itself is good. It's a good product. We enjoyed it as a wrestling show. But, you know, the numbers aren't enough.
They're not just yet. And that's what I said to someone on Twitter. I said, it's just too early. I think that was the timing of it was just not quite right.
Yeah.
You know, it's still being built, the industry right now, you know, and it's getting bigger. The biggest promotions are getting bigger. There are now, you know, I think 2 years ago, I'd have said there are about 200 wrestling promotions, and some of them are far too small. some of them are bigger than others. And you can see wrestling in every town in the country, which is marvelous, but also would stretch any industry thin, I think, a little bit.
Yeah.
What you're getting now is 4 or 5 promotions rising to the top and actually touring, or at least putting on shows nearly everywhere in the country, or at least in nearly every region of the country. And they are continuing to cultivate a fan base and find new ways of making money from that fan base. And I think if you did it maybe next New Year's Eve, it might just have managed it, because, you know, the incredible thing is that actually, you know, that the success of ICW in Progress in particular, and What Culture to maybe a slightly lesser extent, I'd say, has driven up fans who perhaps didn't know anything about British wrestling, and they've brought them in. All of a sudden, they're now, people are aware of British wrestling, and it continues to grow thanks to so many different things. And I just think maybe it was a bit too early. But as I said, I think the show was really good. I think the idea behind it, I think, put it this way, there will be people who thought it was a childish show. I think what I would say to that is, look, you are not the target audience. If you're a hardcore British wrestling fan, you are not the target audience for this show. The target audience for this show are the same people who watch Saturday Night's Takeaway with Ant and Dec.
Yeah.
Those are the people they're looking to get. So what they're thinking is, okay, mum and dad settling down for the evening, probably cooking the dinner for the night. They want to chuck their kids in front of the television and have them watch something that keeps them entertained for a couple of hours, but at the same time means that they don't have to ask them questions about what's going on, because it's not very complicated.
No.
Simple storyline that keeps them entertained, and that's it. And that's all those people are looking for. That's all ITV executives are looking for. So if you didn't think it appealed to you, it wasn't supposed to appeal to you. It's that simple.
I mean, you only have to look at Harry Smith's week.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, one day he's the happy-go-lucky British bulldog who's, you know, come to make the save, and then literally 7 days later, he's beating the shit out of Kazuchi Kurikadara in Kurikan Hall. You know, and that's the key difference between what ITV are after and what New Japan's audience are after.
Yeah, exactly. So there's, I mean, look, there's plenty to beat. I didn't really want to come across as really negative. I guess my thing, I guess where my interest has ended up being, after all of the talking I've done about wrestling and the thinking about wrestling over the last 3 years or 4 years or whatever, my big interest and my big specialty, I suppose, is big picture.
Yeah,
it's business. It's what's working from a commercial perspective. Forget artistic perspective, because everyone's talking about that. Everybody has a viewpoint, and you know, it's, and I love the idea that you could, you know, completely score every single wrestling match and put them in this massive long list of an Excel spreadsheet. I just haven't got the time to do it, and I haven't got the inclination to do it. You know, 6 months ago, I think I had just started a new job when we last spoke.
Yeah.
Now, in the last 6 months, I've bought a house and I've got engaged. So,
congratulations. It's so the theme of the Troopany show at the moment is people getting married and engaged. Sorry, carry on.
Yeah. So those are the things that are drawing my time away. So when I'm thinking about wrestling, it's what's working, you know, where's the business at, what's going on, what are the numbers telling me? Those are things I'm always drawn to, because I like numbers anyway, but they're also, is what, you know, it's what I deal in now in terms of wrestling. It's the only thing I do deal in, because I don't watch enough of the products to be able to tell you how good that last match between AJ Styles and Dean Ambrose was, or, you know, how amazing this episode of Ring of Honor show was, because I've no time or inclination to watch it. And plus, all of my wrestling viewing now has been taken up by Chikara, thanks to you.
Hey,
it's all I watch. It's genuinely all I watch. If I'm like, before I go to sleep, get into bed, got for about an hour, I'll watch an hour of Chikara. I have watched. I worked out the other day. I've watched 42 Chikara shows in 2.5 months.
How far have you got into? Was it started in 2003? I'm trying to think.
I started in 2005. So
okay.
I watched the first two Chikara shows they ever did. They haven't got a lot of the first year on Chikara Tokyo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I thought, you know what? I'm only going to start watching when they've got every show, basically. So I think like seasons 2 and 3, they've also got some of the shows missing. So I started from season 4, which is in 2005. Tag World Grand Prix.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 2005, which for anyone who doesn't know, and this was my personal idea of hell about a year ago, which is 3 nights of tag team wrestling. The first 2 nights each have 12 tag team matches And that's it. That's the entire show. And then the third night is the quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals of the tag Grand Prix. So another 7 tag matches, plus a 10-man tag match and an 8-man tag match. And that's it on that show. And I loved it. I loved every second of it. I loved the stupid characters. I loved what I loved about it is it was a great introduction to a shit ton of wrestlers. It was unbelievable how many new wrestlers I suddenly had seen, because you just watched 32 tag teams in a tournament.
Yeah.
And then from then on, I've just watched and watched and watched. I've seen my favorite ever match.
Oh, wow.
Ever. Who's that? Any match ever, which was the Torneo Cibernético 2005.
All right, yeah.
Hour and 40 minute match. And for anybody, again, anyone who doesn't, I'm sure there's lots of people who have no idea what that is. It's basically 2 teams of 8, where it's elimination tag, but the twist is that each of the teams are numbered 1 to 8. And the 2 number 1 guys start in the ring, the 2 number 2 guys stand on the apron, and the rest, numbers 3 through 8, kneel down beside the ring. And when number 1 tags out to number 2, he then gets down and goes to the end of the queue, and the number 3 guy stands on the apron.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it just goes on from there, and it lasted 1 hour and 40 minutes. It had all these stories converging in this one match, and they didn't have an elimination for the first 45 minutes. I mean, this is the craziness. And I usually hate long matches just because they're long. You know, I'm one of the biggest detractors of the Iron Man match at WrestleMania 12. You know, I think it's one of the most overrated wrestling matches ever. I just couldn't get over how good it was. I was just, if you wanted positivity, then all you had to do is make me watch Chikara from 2005, and you got it. So I'm now up to about nearly the end of 2006. So that's how far I've gone in.
Going deep.
I don't see any end in sight. I'm just going to keep smashing through it, because it's really weird that I like it, I think, because of the fact that it is very zany.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is kind of comedy. So it's kind of occasionally not taken very seriously. You know, the kind of thing you can expect is, for example, I've just watched The Loser Leaves the Present match between Lance Steele and Lance Steele. who, for those who don't know, is a time-displaced noble knight, and, you know, has come from the past, and he had a tag team partner, Jolly Roger, who got injured and had to end his career. And so Lance Steele went back to the past and got a earlier version of himself to team up with in Chikara, and then they started to argue over the positives and negatives of dragons, which culminated in them having a feud, which ended with a loser leaves the present match, in which the loser had to go back to their own time period.
Yeah.
So that's what you can expect from it. So it's not really what I would usually want, or what I would have thought I would have ever liked. But actually, it's just something about it. It just all makes sense. I can't explain why.
No. I love the lunacy. You know, that this is the company that could get Johnny Saint out of retirement, but they're also the company that could do a story about closing the entire company down and then opening it up again 8 months later. You know, the madness of Chikara and the things they do, which is purely for artistic purposes. They don't make wrestling to make money. They make wrestling because they want to make good wrestling.
Well, I assume, and I may be wrong, but I assume that Quackenbush makes his money from the school.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Probably I think he just runs the show then to give the graduates of the school somewhere to work,
yeah.
And get themselves noticed. And in the meantime, he actually draws a crowd of people to watch him, and it maybe balances itself out in terms of not losing any money, but not making any money, but he just makes an earning from the... I think he's also a consultant for WWE now as well, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah, he's done a couple of camps for the Performance Center as well.
You know? Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And also, I think that's the other thing, is I cannot believe how good a wrestler Mike Quackenbush was.
Oh, Quack was awesome. Absolutely phenomenal.
I can't believe how good he is. He's just so good. And I think it's the sort of thing where you realize this guy didn't make it because... or didn't make it to the big leagues, because he doesn't look at all impressive. It looks like a normal guy that will walk down the street. Not even like, he's not fat, he's not thin, he's not athletic, he's not like athletic looking, I should say. He's not muscly,
no.
he's not
good looking. He's not ugly. He's nothing. He's just completely normal looking, but he's a wonderful wrestler. And I just really loved it. Yeah, I've almost been, you know, it's just, I can't explain it.
We'll have to do an episode on Quack one day.
I think he's become my new hero in wrestling. I think that's what it is. He's such a great wrestler, but also the knowledge that he's the guy training these guys to become wrestlers in the first place, a lot of them anyway, and the fact that he's sort of also wielding this storyline, which is kind of very strange, but works. The beginning, that tag World Grand Prix, the final of that tournament, Chris Hero turns on Mike Quackenbush, and that sets off a feud, which is still going now, where I'm up to in 2006, some 18 months later, and they've had one singles match
in
that time.
Yeah.
40 shows that this storyline's been going on, even one singles match. That's the kind of storytelling that you don't get very many of the places.
No. It's just, I mean, one of the great joys of my life was actually meeting Mike Quackenbush.
I imagine.
It was just like, because at the end of every Chikara show, all the roster line up to shake everybody's hands as they leave. Mm. You know, very and nice. Quack's at the end, and he said, thank you. And I was like, no, thank you, Quack, for everything. So... there you go.
Good stuff. So we did leave it on a positive note.
There you go. Right. Well, thank you very much, Ben, for your time today. Appreciate it.
No, thanks for having me. Maybe I'll come on in 6 months' time.
Just talk about Chikara then.
Well, yeah, by then I'll have watched up to about 2010. Yeah. And I won't be able to you can tell I already can't shut up about it, but I won't be able to ever stop there by that point.
Okay, well, Quack's greatest matches as an episode. You can follow him at Tink Holloway on Twitter. You can follow me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can follow WrestleTalk at WrestleTalk_TV on Twitter as well. Thank you very much for listening to the WrestleTalk Podcast Network, which is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud, and all the favorite places you get your podcasts from. Please do subscribe to WrestlePlus, where you can find all the NGW wrestling that we do, the Finn Martin Report. Oh, well, that's actually on the Podcast Network. The Finn Martin Wrestling Histories. Get that right. Oh. Finn Martin Wrestling Histories. You've got the Squash on the WrestlePod Podcast Network, and you've got all the other stuff that Ollie does on the YouTube channel, and some exclusive stuff as well for WrestlePlus. Thank you very much for supporting WrestleTalk. We appreciate it. Take care, and we'll see you next week.